It's 8 o'clock.
Good morning. This is Northern Light for Monday, November 1st. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe.
New Yorkers are being asked on tomorrow's ballot to alter the state's constitution to make changes to the redistricting process. The measure has mixed support from government reform groups.
Ultimately, what we're going to need to do is to change the constitution to have true, independent, nonpartisan, citizen-led redistricting. And we're going to keep working for that. But in the meantime, we can make the process better. And that's what Prop 1 seeks to do.
A new survey shows isolation and frequent moves are harming military teens' mental health. The survey was started by two teenagers whose military families moved around a lot, meaning new communities and schools.
If you have students coming in who don't feel welcome, who don't feel like they're being taken care of, you have a very negative environment, and it's very hard to bring people together in that way.
Also, a daughter remembers her father, who was a prolific photographer in the Adirondacks a century ago. All of that's coming up on Northern Light. Stick with us.
Broadcast of Northern Light is supported by the Village Mercantile, bringing Saranac Lake to places beyond the Adirondacks. With an array of Adirondack-made and inspired goods, villagemerc.com, anything but general, and Apothecary Chocolates, making gourmet chocolates by hand from all-natural herbs, botanicals, and tree syrups. Apothecarychocolates.com.
This is Northern Light. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe. Just months after getting its first female governor, Attorney General Letitia James has announced her run for governor of New York in 2022 against Governor Kathy Hochul. James oversaw the investigation that found former Governor Andrew Cuomo harassed multiple women and ultimately led to his resignation. She announced her candidacy the day after Cuomo was charged with a misdemeanor sex crime, which she said validated her office's findings. James would become the first black female governor in the country.
A federal court is siding with the Hochul administration in saying that healthcare workers cannot cite religious exemptions to avoid getting the COVID-19 vaccine. According to the Watertown Daily Times, the ruling from the Second District Court of Appeals overturns the decision of a lower district court judge in northern New York. Earlier this fall, Governor Hochul had issued a mandate that all healthcare workers must be vaccinated or lose their jobs, but a group calling itself We the Patriots USA sued the state health department, and the lower district court agreed, which temporarily allowed religious exemptions. But now, the ruling from the federal court sends the case back to the district court for a full hearing.
For the second time in 7 years, New Yorkers are being asked to alter the state's constitution to make changes to the redistricting process. Redistricting draws new lines for congressional, Senate, and assembly districts every 10 years, according to changes in the census. As Karen DeWitt reports, the measure has mixed support from government reform groups.
The last time a constitutional amendment was on the ballot to change redistricting, in 2014, a 10-member commission of 5 Democrats and 5 Republicans was created to draw the lines. The 2 co-executive directors had to be from opposing parties. That commission, now working on the new district lines using 2020 census results, is currently deadlocked. Democrats favor one set of maps, while GOP commissioners support a different plan. A supermajority or two-thirds of the legislature can override the commission and create the new districts instead. The proposed changes to that system on this fall's ballot would eliminate the requirement that the co-executive directors be from different parties. The commissioners simply have to agree on who they want to lead them. And it would require just 60% of the legislature, not two-thirds, to override the commission's decisions. Will it make the process better and more fair? Susan Lerner, with the reform group Common Cause, says yes.
It's definitely going to reduce the ability of political parties to manipulate the map-making process for partisan gain.
Lerner says it also caps the current size of the state Senate at 63 seats to further minimize political gerrymandering. In the past, the size of the Senate was expanded to help Republicans hold on to an increasingly slim majority. But not all government reform groups agree. Citizens Union and the League of Women Voters say the proposition would make redistricting even worse. The League's Jennifer Wilson says the requirement that two-thirds of the legislature approve the new maps should stay. She says it allows for more participation from the political party in the minority if the Senate and Assembly are closely divided. Wilson says the 60% approval rule would actually strengthen the political party that is in power at the time of the vote.
The legislature will have total power over the process if the commission fails or if they decide they don't like the two first sets of maps. And that's not really a great policy. We used to have our legislature draw our state assembly and state senate maps, and we have very gerrymandered districts here in New York State.
Republicans, who are in the minority in both houses of the legislature, are also against the amendment. GOP Party Chair Nick Langworthy calls it a power grab by Democrats.
Democrats in Albany apparently aren't satisfied with the amount of power they have. They want to kneecap this commission in the middle of its work. They have put a referendum in place that would strip a lot of the independence of that commission in the middle of their process on the ballot and are masquerading it as good government.
The amendment would take effect in January, and it would supersede the rules of the current redistricting process. Lerner, with Common Cause, agrees that the amendment is not perfect, but she says some of the changes are needed now. The amendment also speeds up the timeline for drawing the maps to be ready in time for the new June primary date for statewide elections.
Ultimately, what we're going to need to do is to change the Constitution to have true, independent, nonpartisan, citizen-led redistricting. And we're going to keep working for that. But in the meantime, we can make the process better. And that's what Prop 1 seeks to do.
There are also four other ballot propositions, including changes to allow same-day voter registration and universal mail-in balloting, and an amendment to ensure New Yorkers the right to clean air and clean water. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You're listening to Northern Light right here on North Country Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past eight. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Just ahead, Andy Flynn talks with the daughter of a popular Adirondack photographer in the early 1900s. The conversation coming up in just a few minutes here on Northern Light. Then join us later this week for North Country Bookmarks. Host Jessica Lawrence spoke with debut novelist Eric Nguyen, whose new book, Things We Lost to the Water, follows a Vietnamese family who resettles in New Orleans. That plus many more conversations coming up this Friday at lunchtime on Bookmarks.
Potsdam cellist Beth Robinson. Northern Light is supported by the ARC Jefferson St. Lawrence, supporting individuals with disabilities to achieve their goals for more fulfilled lives. The ARC, JSLC.org, the ARC Jefferson St. Lawrence, achieve with us. And by the Osable River Association, building solutions for flood resilience in Adirondack communities. Learn more at osableriver.org.
The U.S. Supreme Court is preparing to hear a gun rights case that could threaten restrictions on guns in airports, churches, schools, and other places where people gather. The case centers on New York's restrictive gun permit law and whether challengers to the law have a right to carry a firearm in public for self-defense. The case the justices will hear this Wednesday comes as gun violence has surged in the state, and it could dramatically increase the number of people eligible to carry firearms as they go about their daily lives.
A new survey of more than 2,000 teenage military dependents shows their mental health is suffering. The survey was initiated by two teenagers who also created a group that aims to address feelings of isolation and depression in military kids. Ann Klingendorf reports for the American Homefront Project.
I'll make a man.
Elena Ashburn is 17 years old and has moved 7 times. Along the way, she figured out that music is a huge stress reliever, especially karaoke.
Let's get down to business to defeat the Huns.
Now Ashburn lives outside Fort Lauderdale, and her Army Colonel dad is about to retire. All the moving has been really hard, especially after she settled into a high school in Pennsylvania and suddenly had to move to Florida.
I really had a hard time moving away. I really struggled with depression and had to end up going to a therapist and was sort of like, what is all this suffering for? Why am I being so sad? What is the purpose of this? I don't want it to be for nothing.
She reached out to another musician friend whose family is deployed to South Korea. The two created Bloom, a military teen support organization. Matthew O is a 17-year-old percussionist and has moved 8 times. The survey that Bloom did in coordination with the National Military Family Association showed 42% of military teens reported low mental well-being and 45% reported moderate mental well-being. That leaves only 13% reporting that they're doing well. O says his family's most recent deployment was especially difficult.
I moved to Korea 2 years ago, and that was kind of a dark time for me. And I was constantly wallowing in self-pity because of what I had left behind.
But, he says, as a musician, he's quick to make friends and get involved. He's doing much better now. He's also the student body president at his high school on a U.S. installation in South Korea and keeps an eye on other students.
If you have students coming in who don't feel welcome, who don't feel like they're being taken care of, you have a very negative environment, and it's very hard to bring people together in that way.
Colorado Springs-based family therapist Lisa Collingridge saw exactly that. She got into the field of mental health 5 years ago after noticing a gap in services for her children, who are military teens themselves. Her family has moved 7 times with her husband's military career.
It's emotional dysregulation that they don't know how to manage, and they don't have anyone that they're connected with to help them navigate those feelings.
She says that instability creates risk factors that can lead to a mental health diagnosis. That's bad for the kids and also the future of the armed forces. 65% of those surveyed said they intend to serve, compared to 14% of their peers in civilian families.
If we eliminate those kids because they've gone through mental health problems that were a result of military lifestyle, what type of messages are we sending?
The Department of Defense does have some mental health programs for military dependents, but Collingridge says they're not enough. As for what the general population can do,
invite them to participate in the community. We love to say military kids are resilient, and they are, but I don't want them to have to be resilient. I want them to be taken care of.
In addition to starting Bloom, Ashburn and O have also written and recorded a song about how it feels to move so often. It's called Uprooted and compares constant deployments to a monster uprooting a tree.
And after the tree had been ripped up and hurled, it found itself standing in a strange new world.
O and Ashburn use Bloom to create a sense of community through the web and social media platforms like TikTok and Instagram. Ashburn says they're trying to take the stresses and sad parts of military life and help them bloom into something prettier. In Shawnee, Kansas, I'm Ann Kniggendorf.
This story was produced by the American Homefront Project, a public media collaboration that reports on American military life and veterans. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
You're listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. In just a minute, Grover Cleveland, not the president, but a prominent photographer in the Adirondacks 100 years ago. After that, stick around for news headlines from NPR just ahead at 8:30. And Bird Note, of course, is coming up at 8:42. But first, we've got a look at the weather. Right now, it's 42 degrees in Russell, 7 degrees Celsius in Hemingford, 41 degrees in Indian Lake, 47 in Pulaski. We can expect sunny skies for much of the region, a little bit cloudier as we head down along the St. Lawrence River. Highs in the upper 40s expected today. Tomorrow, a chance of drizzle throughout the area with highs around 50 expected. And then temperatures are expected to cool off a little bit as we head later into the week. Well, Lake Placid was a growing resort just before and after World War I. Trains carried thousands of tourists there every year. Some would bring their own cameras, but consumer photography was just taking off. And most tourists would buy picture postcards to capture memories of their Adirondack vacation. This demand drew the attention of professional photographers to take pictures, develop film, and print postcards. People like Grover Cleveland, not the president, like we said, but a prolific Adirondack photographer. Andy Flynn has our story.
So I'm learning.
Hello. We're so sorry. We're a little late.
At just under 5 feet tall, Clara Cleveland Bass walks through the front door of the Lake Placid train station. This is where the Lake Placid North Elba Historical Society runs a museum. A white sash stretches across Clara's body. It says 100 and Fabulous.
I'm Andy. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
It's Tuesday, September 7th, Clara's 100th birthday. Clara spends part of the time living with her daughter Sam in Texas and part of the time living with her daughter Ruth in Arkansas. This was a special trip. Home to Lake Placid, not to receive a gift on her birthday, but to give one. She handed over hundreds of her father's glass plate negatives and photographs to the local historical society. Her father was Grover Cleveland, a professional photographer in Lake Placid for about 40 years in the early 1900s.
He would sit at his bench in the red light in the developing room, and he had a panel of switches that he could put a negative up here, and then he could click the switches and illumine part of that film, a negative, or the film, and bring it to life. That's why so many of his pictures look glowing like that.
Cleveland first arrived in Lake Placid in 1916. He worked for a professional photographer. Then he served in the U.S. Army during World War I. He came back to Lake Placid in 1920, worked for another photographer, and then opened his own shop. He sold postcards of his photos, and he developed film. Clara said she was impressed with her father's ability to compose a picture just right.
One time he let me look, I don't know which camera it was, he took had a Graflex sometimes, but when I looked into it, it was upside down. And how he could do that and still know how to get the maximum out of a picture he was focusing and wanting to print. And so it was just amazing that he had that talent.
At the train station, Clara's daughter, Sam, picked a postcard out of a box. It was an image of the Olympic Arena taken in June 1941. In the bottom left corner was the number 300.
The photograph you just took had a number at the bottom. That was the number of the postcard. Okay. He would take a book around with all of these photographs, postcards, made into postcards, and they'd each have a number. And the store owner would say, I want 10 of number 300 or 12 of number 117, something like that.
Cleveland enjoyed taking photos of local events and the famous people who came to town. He even took photos of President Calvin Coolidge coming out of church in Saranac Lake when he spent the summer of 1926 in the Adirondacks. He was known as the photographer with a cigar in his mouth, at the scene, almost like a roving reporter.
He liked to be where the story was happening. We have several photograph, several groups of fires, Lake Placid Inn fire, Paul Smith fire, and a couple others where he was on the scene.
Cleveland especially liked covering Franklin D. Roosevelt when he came to town, first as governor, then as president.
And so my father always managed to be there, and since he had a press pass, and he would call out, what did he call Roosevelt? What did he?
Not Mr. Roosevelt. He was the governor.
He called him governor.
Governor, yeah. Clara remembers seeing FDR. They were in Crown Point when the Lake Champlain Bridge opened in 1929. And she remembers going to the 1932 Winter Olympics with her family. Her father took a lot of photos at the Olympics. Clara said she brought her father's photos home to Lake Placid because she knew they'd be in safe hands. She read about how the Historical Society had taken care of other glass plate negatives in the collection.
Because I said at least they'll never get thrown away or faded and just disappear.
But you've been saving these for many, many years. Why did you decide that you needed to hang on to these photos?
Well, that's because that's what you do with pictures. You never throw a picture away.
Many of Cleveland's photos are expected to be on display at the Train Station Museum in a few years. For North Country Public Radio's North Country at Work project, I'm Andy Flynn in Lake Placid.
Visit our website. Check out photos of Andy's North Country at Work profile there of photographer Grover Cleveland. And you can find more of our North Country at Work stories and conversations all at ncpr.org. It's 8:22. Broadcast of Northern Light is supported by Thomas J. Lombombard, P.E. Keysville, providing engineering planning and environmental consulting services to Northern New York and Vermont, 518-834-7729. And Adirondack Health in Saranac Lake, welcoming Dr. Henry Gaborio, a facial plastic and reconstructive surgeon specializing in skin cancer screenings, cosmetic procedures, and acne treatments. Details at adirondackhealth.org. The Horzowski Trio is visiting the Adirondacks a little later this month. They'll be performing on the Hill and Hollow Music Series coming up Sunday, November 14th at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. This concert will be at the historic Saranac Methodist Church on Route 3 in Saranac. Their program features music by Dvorak, Rebecca Clark's Piano Trio, and Robert Schumann's Trio Number 1. Advance reservations are requested. You must be vaccinated and masked, and admission is a suggested donation of $15. If you want more information, check out the website hillandhollowmusic.org. And here is some music featuring the trio with music by Robert Schumann. Thank you. Jesse Mills on violin, Riko Aizawa on piano, and Ula Akahoshi on cello. They are the Horzowski Trio and will be at historic Saranac Methodist Church on Route 3 in Saranac coming up on Sunday, November 14th, 3 o'clock in the afternoon for a concert. And check out the website Hill and Hollow Music for more information.
The time coming up on 8:28, I want to remind everybody about a few events going on in the region. The ongoing events at the Adirondack Folk School, a wonderful institution in our region that teaches the traditional crafts of the Adirondacks taught by top-rated instructors. You can find out more at their website at adirondackfolkschool.org. They always have a lot of classes going on. Coming up, there are classes in tinsmithing, wood turning to make a holiday ornament, learning to use a scroll saw, or how to build a sofa table. All of that and more is coming up at the Adirondack Folk School. Again, you can find out more about their classes and their instructors at adirondackfolkschool.org in Lake Luzerne.
And that's it for our show for today.
Morning Edition is coming up in just a few minutes. After that, stick around for the Marketplace Morning Report between 8:51 and 9 o'clock, where you'll get caught up on all the morning's business news. That's just ahead right here on North Country Public Radio.
If you miss an episode, listen back to the archive, any place you get your podcasts, and subscribe to our daily news roundup, Story of the Day. You'll find more information at ncpr.org.
Or you can listen live to Story of the Day every weekday afternoon at 4:50 right here on NCPR. Keep up the station throughout the day on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Or send us an email. Reach out at news@ncpr.org. I'm Monica Sandresky.
And I'm Todd Moe. Thanks for listening. Be well.